Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, The Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed podcast brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 403. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at Eric Cross MLB, and the show is at Tool Shed Pod. I have a great guest with me in the Tool Shed this episode. He is a dynasty content writer for Pitcher List and CEO of the Four Seam Fantasy Substack, Mr. Martin Sikolski at M_SKI22 on Twitter. Martin, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing good, Cross. Thanks for having me on again. It's always a pleasure to get on the show with you. And sorry I missed you. We were supposed to connect sometime last month, and I completely messed up on that. So thanks for having me on and being patient with me.
Yeah, of course, man. You know, we all have busy lives. We're both fathers. We got kids. We got family stuff. You know, we got baseball stuff. It happens. No worries there. Glad to have you on. And we got a good little bunch of players to talk about today. We'll do more of like a dynasty kind of hold or fold, buy or sell, however you want to phrase it. We'll talk about just 10 intriguing players, you know, some of that are, you know, most of which are, you know, hitting pretty well right now. We're five hitters, five pitchers. We'll see if we're buying, selling, you know, holding. We'll see all that. But before we get into that, the usual housekeeping. If you like the show, please rate and review. You can find all of my content either on Rotoballer or over on my Patreon, which is toolshedfantasy.com. And make sure you check out all of the great content over on Rotoballer with Rotoballer's MLB Premium Pass. Gain access to expert tools and advice from proven winners. Import your leagues with TeamSync and get expert advice customized for your league-specific settings. Win more with Rotoballer's lineup assistant tools, free agent finder, prop picks, and the number one DFS lineup optimizer. Our premium pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use the discount code TOOLSHED at checkout. All right, we'll start off with the hitters here, and one of the hottest hitters in all of baseball right now, Kyle Stowers, had a three-homer game going into the All-Star break, a two-homer game coming out of it. Overall, he's up to 21 home runs, four steals, 295, 372, 559 slash line in 359 plate appearances with the Miami Marlins, who are starting to become a little fun. He has a couple good hitters down there with him and Ramirez kind of leading the way. Stowers is, again, one of the hotter hitters in baseball. Leading the way is his quality of contact metrics, very much elite there, but still a pretty interesting profile here, Martin. You know, the high quality of contact, but some contact rate concerns, a little bit of a higher K rate. So are you buying right now, or are you selling Kyle Stowers? And, you know, where do you think he kind of settles in as long-term in terms of like dynasty rankings?
Yeah. So Stowers is a guy that I'm kicking myself because I had him in dynasty at one point and I just dropped him. I was like, this guy, I don't think he's ever going to get there. He was blocked in Baltimore. I mean, he went through the system so fast from high A to triple A and like over like a span of 100 games right after COVID. And then he was at triple A for three full seasons, which, you know, it's like between the Cousers and the Kerstads and the Dylan Beavers even was at the, Roland at the time, I didn't think he was ever going to get there. And so once the trade happened, it was like, okay, now he's going to free up, maybe play a little bit. And it's just, he's just taken off now. He always had good pop and decent batting average in the minors. I was a 260 lifetime hitter in the minors, pretty good. Some decent pop, double digit home runs, I think in four seasons. Everything I'm seeing on Stowers, the batted ball data is just really good. A lot of hard contact. He's finding the barrel a lot. And the biggest thing is just the path of playing time. I mean, that's half the battle anymore. And with his ability to hit the ball hard and, you know, to all fields, it's kind of exciting. With that said, you did mention the swing and miss concerns. Obviously that's part of his profile. If that's something that you can deal with and understand that it's going to be part of it, then by all means, he's definitely a viable fantasy asset. He's hitting like 300 this year too. That's going to come down. He won't be in that range. He's running like a 370 BABIP, which is really, really high. So I'm thinking Stowers settles in at like 260, 270 with a 30 home runs and decent counting stats. Like that's viable in every format, and I'm buying on Stowers right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of there with you, and I've written this up on, I think both on Rotoballer and in my daily cross examination article I do on my Patreon, where, yeah, the power is, I think, definitely legit. I mean, it was pretty good power last year, and he's kind of taken it to a new level. This year, he's been over a 50% hard hit rate each of the last 2 years, over 91 mile an hour exit velocity. That barrel rate has almost doubled from 10.9 to 19.9%. You know, he hits the ball at ideal angles, 39.5% sweet spot rate, 25% pull air rate, which is over doubled. That's a 2.5-time increase there. He was only at 10% in 2024. So hitting the ball at much more ideal angles, ground ball rates come down 10%. Yeah, I think if you take away, you know, 30-ish points in average, I mean, given how hard he hits the ball, he still probably could run a little bit of a higher BABIP, even if it does normalize to some degree. But yeah, if he's like 260-ish, 30 to 35 home runs, you know, solid amount of runs in RBI, and, you know, maybe throws in a handful of steals there just for good measure, that's still kind of like a borderline top 100 guy. I mean, maybe he sneaks into the back end of top 100 some years. Maybe he's more like the 125 to 150 range other years. But yeah, that's still, you know, if he's pretty good in three categories, okay in the average, and, you know, obviously he'll never be much of a runner, but yeah, that's still a pretty solid player there. So, but I don't think you were alone in kind of how you viewed him and maybe handled him in fantasy a couple of years ago. He was kind of the, you know, low man on the totem pole, or at least a lot further down the totem pole when you looked at all the other names they've had over the years. You mentioned like the Cowsers, the Holidays, the Mayos, etc. You know, even Norby was a more highly ranked, you know, in how he thought of prospect than Stowers back in the day. And even when they both came over to Miami, I think, you know, Norby was more highly thought of then too. So not anymore. Norby's had a rough year and he's hurt now. And then Stowers obviously has been, you know, becoming one of the better power hitters in all baseball in his age 27 year. Yeah, so I'm mostly buying this. Like, again, I'm not buying the average. You think that comes down a little bit, OBP comes down a little bit, but I'm buying him as like a, you know, in the vicinity of a top 100 dynasty asset for sure. Yeah, I think that's definitely a realistic kind of range for him to settle into here, you know, over the next handful of years or so. Next guy up here from our Boston Red Sox, Sidan Raffaello, who's been really the heartbeat of that Red Sox team, you know, playing phenomenal defense in center field and really just improving across the board. You know, had a solid rookie year last year, you know, 15 home runs, 19 steals, you know, scored 70 runs. Slashing wasn't anything great, but this year, you know, he's kind of improved literally everywhere across the board. Slashing 267, 309, 471. He's already up to 56 runs scored, so he could make a run at like 90 or so runs, 14 home runs, 13 steals. He's hitting the ball harder. You know, barrel rate's up to 12.5%. Average EV has jumped 4 miles an hour to 90.6. Hard hit rate's up about 10% to 46.8%. He's striking out less, you know, making more contact as well. Zone's up. Overall is up. Both of those up around 7.5%. To the point where he's now league average in terms of contact rate and above average power, and he's an elite runner. There's a lot to like here. I mean, I think these are all tangible changes, and yeah, he's still super aggressive, and that'll probably cause some peaks and valleys. You know, chase rate, though it's come down a little bit, is still 42%, very, very high there. So yeah, that's still a concern. You know, walk rate still not great. OBP wouldn't probably never be great, but I think Rafael is putting himself in that top 100 dynasty discussion right now. I don't quite have him there yet, but if this continues like the rest of the season and we end up with a, you know, a 20 plus season with 85 to 90 runs and a pretty solid slash line, I think I can see myself putting Rafael at top 100 at the end of the season. What are your thoughts on that, Martin, and just the thoughts on Rafael's season in general?
Yeah, it's been a big surprise. when he was coming up through the minors, we knew he could play defense. We knew he would hit a little bit, but I didn't think he'd ever get to this level. So whatever Alex Bregman said to him to make him fix yep. his approach or his swing or whatever they talked about, it's working. Still hyper aggressive. That's always going to be a problem. But with that, like you said, it's come the big jump in the contact rates. And so anything in the zone now, he's just hammering. And it's kind of fun to watch. I mean, he's been carrying this offense over the course of the last month. I mean, he's been so hot between him and Story. This team is viable again. And he's one of the reasons why. So as far as buying and selling in Dynasty, I want to buy. I still have concerns over the plate discipline. I worry if he'll get back to his old ways. But again, even with his old ways, he still went 15-19 last year. He's getting older. He's still just 24. This just very well could just be the breakout, right? I mean, the batted ball stuff is looking really good. His contact rates are really good. And he just seems like a different guy, especially over the last month and a half. So if these changeable changes that we're seeing are going to stick, I don't see why he shouldn't be up in the conversation with Jaron Duran. I mean, are they really that much different of a player at that point? I mean, Rafael is going to run just as much as Duran does, and he's arguably got better power. Duran, his power kind of sank back up or, you know, went back down this year. So it's like, you know, isn't he kind of the consistent portion of what we wanted from Duran? Yeah. I don't see, you know, it's not outside the range of possibilities. I'm on the fence. I buy his real life value more than I buy his fantasy value, just because I'm still nervous to take a risk on it. But he's definitely a guy that if you have an opportunity to buy low or sell very high, you definitely have to take the chance.
That's a good point, because I think if someone told you, you know, before the season that we'd be kind of debating who is, you know, the better value right now between Duran and Rafaela, they'd probably look at you funny, because at the time, Rafaela, again, coming off a decent rookie year, but he's probably thought of more as like a back end, top 200 guy, somewhere in that range. And then Duran was, you know, top 25, top 50, something like that. But you look at it right now, just looking at the seasons they're having right now, you know, Duran has 8 home runs, 16 steals. Rafaela was 14 and 13. Rafaela scored a few more runs, slash line, 257, 322, 427 for Duran, 267, 309, 471 for Rafaela. You know, Duran hits the ball a little harder in terms of average EV. Hard hit rates are pretty close. Barrel rate to Rafaela. Speed, you know, sprint speed is pretty close as well. Both around the 90th percentile. So, yeah, it's actually gotten, even just looking at their metrics, it's gotten pretty close. And Rafaela's also 4 years younger, too. Duran's 28. Rafaela's 24. Yeah, that's a good thought. So I think you'll still see a pretty sizable gap on them in dynasty rankings, though, you know, one's trending up, one's trending down a little bit, not like terribly far down, but definitely sliding down my rankings. Duran is this season. So yeah, maybe end of the year, maybe these two are pretty damn close in dynasty rankings. I could absolutely see that.
Yeah. I mean, with the emergence of Roman Anthony too, and yep. Abreu playing really well. I mean, there's an argument to be made that Duran's the fourth best outfielder in that team. And that's encouraging for the Sox. And that honestly could be why we're seeing so many rumors about Duran being on the block, because those three guys are all playing really good baseball right now. And Duran's value is at a peak. So this might be the time that they move on.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see, you know, Duran being moved before the deadline for, you know, pitching or whatever. And yeah, if any one of those, the three, obviously they're not returning Anthony, but any one of the other three, Abreu, Duran, Rafaela, I think Duran's most likely, Rafaela least likely, actually, just given his defense and center, even though they played him at second base today, because, you know, they don't really have anybody else to play second base. But Yeah, I think I'm mostly buying again. I'm kind of with you. I am a little, at least slightly hesitant due to the super high chase rate. And we've seen, you know, even like, you know, Yiner Diaz has had a rough year because of his, you know, higher chase rate. It gets these guys eventually. Just a matter of how quickly does it get them and how hard does it get them. So always a concern for sure of these high chase rate guys. But I'm very, you know, encouraged by what we've seen from Rafael this year. And just as a Red Sox fan, watching him, you know, every day, just seeing, you know, the improvements at the plate, it's been really encouraging to see. So, yeah, I'm mostly buying Rafaela, and I think he's in that top 100 discussion as well. Now, I'll put you kind of on the spot here, Martin. You had to pick right now. You're in a startup dynasty draft. You're on the clock. Say it's like pick 110, 120-ish. You're looking for an outfielder. You go Stowers, you go Rafaela.
I'll take Rafaela, and I'll tell you why. One, team context and counting stats. Even mm-hmm. though Rafaela hits at the bottom of the order, that's going to be a pretty good lineup for a long time. The Marlins are up and coming. I get it. But it's just naturally, they're always going to be, you know, toward the bottom of the offense. Right. And the other reason is Rafaela is going to run. You'll take the 25 steals, even if it comes with the 250 average. And, you know, the power isn't going to quite mesh up, but you can find power in a lot of places in fantasy. You can't always find steals anymore. So,
yeah, that's definitely true. I think they probably end up similar range in terms of average long-term, but yeah, I'll take the more well-rounded profile, the better team context, like you said. So I will lean Rafaela as well, but I think it's fairly close at the same time. All right, next guy up here, shift over to the AL Central. Go with Colt Keith, who, you know, I wrote him up a couple of days ago, and I didn't realize, I mean, I knew he was hitting well, but I didn't realize just how, you know, good the metrics looked under the hood. I mean, he definitely has made a lot of improvements this year. Overall slash line, 260, 343, 427, but that's after a really slow start. He slashed 186, 324, 254. In April, I don't think he even had his first home run to right at the end of April. Then he hit 288 in May, 269 in June, and 326 so far in July. Slug over 500 in both May and July. Excuse me. So definitely on the rise, and the metrics are looking pretty good too, Martin. So are you buying kind of the little mini sneaky breakout here from Colt Keith?
Yeah, Keith was a guy I wrote up a lot in the offseason as a potential breakout. I really liked the stuff I saw under the hood. And I got to see a lot of him a couple of years ago when he was in Toledo. He's just got a really nice approach. He makes really good swing decisions. He doesn't really chase a lot. this year his strikeout rate is manageable at 20% with a walk rate around 11%. I like that a lot. He's finding the barrel a lot. He's already got almost as many barrels as he did last season with, you know, almost 300 less at bats. So I think there's a lot to like with Keith. I guess the biggest thing working against him is the ballpark. I still don't love the ballpark in Comerica. It's kind of finicky. I mean, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. But when the weather gets hot, the ball tends to fly a lot more. Living in this area, I can attest to that, but I don't get to see as much of him as I probably would like because I'm in the Toledo area, which is, you know, right down the street from Detroit, but his bat's going to play just fine in fantasy. Just question of where he's going to kind of play defensively, where he fits in. I think I've got him right now as a second baseman in my dynasty rankings, but realistically he's played first, second, and third. He should have eligibility in all of those positions next year. But he's also DHing a lot. And so it kind of worries me because Kerry Carpenter is going to DH a lot. You know, they're going to want to get some DH at bats for Torque at some point. So is it going to cut into his playing time? Probably. And that's kind of what I'm worried about. So,
you know, that's definitely fair. But at the same time, I do think his ability to play all three of those infield positions definitely does help him stay in the lineup more often than not. But you know, I was kind of, I wouldn't say I was out on Keith after, you know, last season, but I definitely was a little bit down on him, just kind of questioning, you know, how much impact does he have with the bat? I mean, the contact skills were solid, but it's like, I was like, is he more than a 12 to 15 home run guy? And I still don't think he's like, you know, a lot more than that, but I think at this point, with how much his quality of contact has improved, I mean, he's a 10.3% barrel rate, just under a 90 mile an hour average EV, 45.6% hard hit rate, which is up 10.3% from last year. I mean, he's walking more as well, a lot more, almost double the walk rate, while still maintaining the above average zone and overall contact rates. Chase rates come down too, by about 6%. So definitely a lot of good improvements there. He's hitting the ball in the air more frequently. So, you know, maybe, you know, is he now like a, you know, a 260, 270 hitter with, you know, upper teens home runs? I still don't, you know, maybe he sneaks into the low 20s. I wouldn't probably say more than that. Probably capped at like 23 to 24. But, you know, can he be like that 260, 270 guy with a solid OBP? You know, he's not going to provide you any steals. He hasn't had any steals at all this year. But he needs to be like a decent four category guy. Yeah, I think he can. And at this point, that's kind of all you need to be like a top 10 guy at second base, at least. You know, first and third, different story. But with how kind of down the second base spot is, and I actually just wrote up second base today on Rotoballer. I think I had him as my, he's either 10 or 11 at second base. I can't remember. But yeah, he's definitely in that discussion right now for sure. And I don't think he's ever like a top 100 guy, but you know, like a top 125 to 150 guy, I think is fair, a guy that you'll be okay with as your starting second baseman. But I think you'd like him more as like a, you know, in that corner or middle infield slots. But yeah, I think Keith's made a lot of good tangible changes here this year. And I'm definitely looking to an investor now. I think the price tag is still pretty reasonable in dynasty leagues.
I think the biggest thing too, if you look at the Tigers as a whole, they're doing some really nice things offensively. I know it doesn't seem like it because they're not, you know, they're not the Dodgers. They're not, you know, Phillies. They're not hitting the ball out of the yard consistently, but I mean, Gleyber Torres is having a great year. Javi Baez is making better swing decisions. That alone is a victory. Torkelson is back to, you know, looking solid. Carpenter's good. Green's taken that next step finally that we've been waiting for. So they're doing some things right, whatever it is, whoever the hitting coach is, credit to him, because they're doing really, really well this year. And I'm impressed with some of the things I'm seeing from that offense. So.
Yeah, no, as am I. I remember when I was on ESPN Las Vegas back in, I think it was the middle of the late March, kind of previewing the season, they asked me, like, who my kind of, you know, I don't know if it's a sleeper team or how they worded it, but kind of a team that I thought could exceed expectations, and I said the Detroit Tigers. You know, I thought they were, you know, some good young hitting. You know, I like, obviously, you know, Skubal leading the rotation. I like Reese Olson a lot. They have Flaherty, so, you know, I thought that they could be, you know, a really surprise team this year, and they definitely have been. They've been one of the better teams in all of baseball, you know, doing well on both sides of the ball. And yeah, Colt Keith has definitely been a part of that. So yeah, I think Detroit's going to be pretty good here for the next at least half decade or so. All right, let's keep it in the AL Central, go down to maybe one of the five most polarizing players in baseball, and that's Luis Roberts, who I have a couple of shares of in Dynasty, none in Redraft, but I have him in Dynasty, including my home keeper league, where I've had him as a keeper the last probably 4 years or so. Probably won't be this year, but he's starting to heat up, though. I mean, overall, the slash line's 201, 289, 342. Last year was 224, 278, 379. So it's kind of a pretty poor slash line for the last two seasons now. And you know, with some IL stints in there, you're always going to bake those in with Luis Robert. But he has been hitting better of late. You know, in July, he's already got two home runs and three steals in 34 plate appearances, hitting 345, 441, 586 after hitting below the Mendoza line in April, May, and June. I mean, I don't know about you, Martin, but I think Robert's always been, like, every month when I update my rankings, he is one of the hardest players to just figure out where I want to put him. Because obviously we've seen the upside. It's pretty massive. You know, when he's healthy and on, he's still 27 years old. But we've seen a lot more downside than upside. Maybe he gets traded, then that could kind of throw a monkey wrench into this. But I don't know, where are you at on Luis Robert now, given, you know, the ups and downs we've seen this year, how hot he is lately? I mean, where are you at on him?
Oh, Lou Bob. I don't even know.
It's a good answer. Isn't it
funny that right before the deadline, he starts hitting again, and the playoff contenders are just like salivating, waiting to get their shot at him.
Right.
It's going to cost you three high-end prospects, and he's going to go back in the tank next year. Obviously, the talent's there, plus speed, plus power, really good defender. it's probably a motivation issue, but it could just be that he's the biggest underachiever in baseball. His batted ball data is fine. Like, it's not great. It's not terrible. He's getting more barrels this year than he has before, but his EV is down, which, do the math on that. he still runs a low ground ball rate, but one of the things I was looking at when I was writing up my notes for today is that his batted ball distribution is so strange. Over the last 6 years, here's his pull rate: 33%, 41%, 34%, 45%, 32% last year, and then 45% again this year. The pull error rate is just the same: 18%, 23%, 13%, 25%, 17%, and then 20%. Like, what in the hell is that? Like, what is he doing? Why is he doing that? It's like, I don't get it. So, with all due respect to my good friend, our good friend, Mike Carter, this guy just needs to get out of Chicago. And then I can kind of get a feel for really, really what he is. Cause I think he's just given up at this point. He's even said it himself, like, nobody wants to trade for me because he basically sucks. But now he's kind of good again. And so it's like, he's going to get traded. I just hate ranking him. I wish that people could graduate from dynasty rankings like they do prospect rankings, because I would just graduate him even if he hasn't achieved the milestone yet. So, yeah. He's still, I think, like in the top 200 for me overall, but he's so frustrating.
He is easily. I mean, kind of like Spencer Jones is with my prospect rankings. Whenever I think I have a good handle on Robert, like something changes, whether it be, you know, positively, negatively, and I'm like, well, now I have to adjust him up or down. I never feel good about my Robert dynasty ranking. I'm trying to figure out where I have him right now. Let's see. He's not top 100 anymore. I don't think he deserves to be top 100 anymore. Yeah, right now I have him around 150. So, I mean, he could move up. He could move down more like 250 range. I do want to see, though, if he does wind up on another team, whether it be, I don't know, the Dodgers or whoever might trade for him. So I do think he's dealt this year. I think it's a, I'd say I'm feeling like 60-70% chance that Robert's on a different team after the deadline at the end of the month. So we'll kind of see where he winds up and how that might alter the value. Maybe a change of scenery is needed here. But then again, you look at, I just kind of pulled this up while you were talking. I went to the Savant's percentile rankings, and there's only four. So Rubab has a 89th percentile sprint speed, 94th percentile bat speed. There's only four players in baseball that are 89th percentile or above in both of those. It's Byron Buxton, O'Neill Cruz, Julio Rodriguez, and Luis Robert. So it's just some of these metrics that just keep you enticed.
Those four guys deserve each other, don't they?
Oh, absolutely they do. It's like they're hot, cold, you know, like the Katy Perry song. It's like these guys are so, you know, Bucks is having a phenomenal year. Cruz is, I don't even know, he's low average, but, you know, high power speed. J-Rod's starting to heat up. But, yeah, these guys are very, very sexy and enticing, but they can be maddening to roster for many reasons, especially, I think, Lou Bob, the most maddening of them all. So, yeah, at this point, I mean, if you can get him for, I mean, a top, like a back end top 200 price tag, I think the risk is kind of low at that point with a higher potential reward if he gets right. And then, you know, maybe you can, you know, kind of like play the stocks, you know, get the stock while it's low. Hopefully he recoups some value. I mean, maybe that's with a trade to another team, and then, you know, he starts hitting well, and then you can kind of sell him then and make a profit on it. That's kind of what I would do with Robert. But if you have him right now, you get a hold. I think the value is too low to sell, and I wouldn't want to just drop him. I mean, even in shallow leagues, his upside's too high to drop. I just bench him for now. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens here with Roberts over the next, you know, was it a week and a half or so, or to the deadline. All right, go to the National League Central now. Maybe the least exciting name of the five hitters we're talking about here, but, you know, one that's definitely been pretty solid this year. He's hitting well right now and can be valuable to your fantasy teams given what he brings to the table. That's Caleb Durbin with the Milwaukee Brewers. Look at in the month of July, he's hitting .342, .468, .500, and slash .296, .363, .432 last month, and four home runs, four steals combined since the start of June in 138 plate appearances. Now, obviously not, you know, a big power guy. He's kind of bottom of the barrel in terms of barrel rates, EV, hard hit rate, etc. But, you know, contact is where Durbin stands out. 9.3% strikeout rate, zone contact rate around 90%, overall contact rate around 86%. And he's, you know, a good runner too. He hasn't really stolen a lot of bags this year, but he could be a 20 steal guy with maybe 10 home runs or so. But definitely heating up right now. I think the value starting to tick up a little bit here. 25 years old. What do you think about Caleb Durbin, Martin? Do you think Durbin can be a, you know, a viable? I don't think he's ever going to be like a starting, you know, third baseman for you, but think he'd be like a viable corner infield option long term?
I mean, he could be. The batted ball data is just so bad. It's just so bad. Like, it's bottom of the barrel and everything. The good thing, I guess, is that he can run, but he's not even really running. I mean, he's only got 9 bags this year, which I thought he would have had a lot more. I feel like the Brewers kind of just hoard guys like this, right? The Joey Ortiz, Caleb Durbins. They had David Hamilton in their system at one point. You know, Terang, who's actually been really good. But there's just not a lot of juice in the squeeze, as people say, with Durbin. He's a nice, you know, middle infield option if he ever gets eligibility there. A nice corner option, I guess, if you need it. But for me, there's just not a lot that I'm overly interested in. I feel like 10 home runs and 20 steals, which is kind of, I guess, his peak. I feel like you could pretty much just pick that up on the waiver wire a lot of times. I mean, depending on your league size, he could be viable. But for me, he's just kind of meh, and I'm probably going to sell if I can get somebody to buy him. So,
yeah, I mean, I think Durbin's fine. You know, and we talked about Durbin a lot on this podcast, Clegg and I, over the years, especially, you know, when he was balling out in, you know, Arizona last year, he had all those steals. But yeah, his upside is limited. I mean, he's a smaller guy with very limited power. I mean, I think 10 home runs, I mean, he's on pace for around 10 right now, but I think that's probably, you know, I would bet a hefty amount of money we never see him even get to like 15 home runs in the season. If he can get the 10 and 20, you know, steals, 10 home runs, 20 steals with a, you know, solid average, I think he's always going to be a good OBP guy. You know, he doesn't really walk a ton, but he gets hit a ton and gets on base. So the OBP is, you know, higher than you'd think with a guy with a, you know, 7% walk rate. But, you know, I think he's a, you know, solid average OBP guy. You know, I don't know if he ever even gets a lot of runs scored, though. I think he's always going to be, you know, more, especially if he's in Milwaukee, more so like a bottom third of the order guy. I don't really see him being a consistent top third of the order guy, even though he, you know, maybe has the OBP skills to be the up there, but he's probably more so going to be in that, you know, 7, 8, 9 range in the batting order. I think he's fine. Maybe I'd like him more as like a utility guy, you know, depth, you know, infield depth for my fantasy team. But yeah, I don't think I ever see him rising above being maybe a back end top 200 dynasty guy. I think that's kind of capped there with his value. So yeah, I think if you can get a top 200 return for him right now, capitalize on kind of the recent hot stretch over the last 6 weeks for him, I think I would do that.
Yeah, I don't want to poo-poo on Durbin. I mean, obviously, you know, like you said, he's an undersized guy. He's, you know, he does a lot of little things really well.
Right.
He just doesn't excel in anything. And so for fantasy purposes, I guess depending on your league settings would be determined on where you would want him at. So like you said, he's going to have a high OBP. So if you're in an OBP league or a points league, you know, it could be there, although the walks are down. But if you're in an OPS league, like I'm in a lot of OPS leagues. There's just not a lot there for me because his OPS on a great year is going to be 750. And that's just middle of the road. So yeah, it really just is league context dependent for Durbin and fantasy for me.
Yeah, he's kind of like a poor man's Jacob Wilson. That's kind of how I think about Caleb Durbin. But yeah, I just pulled it up. He's been hit 14 times already this year, which is, that's first in the National League. Yeah, I knew that was pretty high. 20 walks, 14 hit by pitch. So that's kind of how the combination of those two is why his OBP is 350 with only a 6.8% walk rate. But
based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, And did I mention the largest satellite to mobile network? They're way ahead, making sure that fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
All right, let's go over to pitchers, but we'll keep it right in Milwaukee with Quinn Priester, who I'll admit, I've never been a Priester guy. I think people that know me know that, even when he was, you know, a pretty highly thought of pitching prospect in Pittsburgh. Then he came over to my Red Sox. Then we quickly traded them back over to Milwaukee. He exceeded all my expectations for him so far this year. He's had a nice outing. I'm underselling it. A great outing against the Dodgers coming out of the break on Friday in Dodger Stadium. 6 innings, 3 hits, no runs, no walks, 10 strikeouts. This is his second outing in the last 4 with at least 10 strikeouts. Never thought I'd see that from a guy that was a pretty mediocre bat misser for even really when he was a top prospect. He's never really been a huge strikeout rate arm, but he's out of the cutter this season. He had it last year. He threw it 9 times last year, but now it's his third most used offering behind the sinker and the slider. It's going to help the slider efficiency go up a bit here. Even if the cutter itself isn't like a phenomenal pitch, but I think it's more so it helps the other pitches. But he's now striking out more batters than he really ever has, but still a 20.4% K rate for the entire season. So where are you at right now on Priester, Martin? He's got 3.33 ERA right now, 1.20 WHIP. He's pitching pretty well, but are you buying it?
You know, every time I see Priester throw another quality start, I die a little bit inside. I really love Yofury Rodriguez. I really do. But I think I'd rather see Quinn Priester out there every fifth day than Richard Fitz. I just still don't buy it. I really still don't buy it. But I think the Brewers should send the Red Sox a really nice Christmas card for initial, getting those initial fixes of the mechanics and the pitch sequencing, because he's been really, really good. But again, like you said, he's not really missing bats. The breaking stuff is, but nothing else is. His sinker is getting a nice amount of ground balls, which helps. But if you go over to our pitcher list data, you'll see that his ideal contact rate is quite poor. So basically, if you're not familiar with ideal contact rate, you're looking at barrels plus solid contact plus flares, and you take that divided by the batted ball event. So, the lower the ideal contact rate, the better. His is like in the 40%, so that's not great. He just doesn't miss enough bats for me. I still think that, there's a little pedigree there, right? But 20% strikeout rate, and that's the best he's had in his career. There's just not much there for fantasy purposes. The Brewers seem to get a lot out of guys like this, the Chad Patricks and, even Quintana is like, 58 years old, and he's still doing well for them. So if you can buy or find somebody that's going to buy Priester, as my pawpaw would have said, get him while the getting's good, because I would be selling him at this point.
Priester kind of reminds me, and this isn't like a bad comp. I think this guy's been a fine pitcher for the most part, up and down, but maybe he settles in as like a Brady Singer type. A sinker baller as well, not the biggest bat misser. And Singer's been, in the vicinity of a top 75 pitcher. Some years a little better, some years a little worse. Still fantasy viable, but more like in the, your SP, 6-ish type of guy, as opposed to a guy that's going to be one of your top 3 or 4. I don't think Priester's that. I don't think he's a top 50 arm, even with how well he's pitched lately. Solid ratios, K rate ticking up. I just don't think there's enough upside there to really kind of be one of your core 3 or 4 arms in your dynasty team. So again, he's exceeded all my expectations, and Milwaukee has definitely kind of found something with him. The pitch mix change, 4-seamer has been cut out. And we mentioned, more cutters, curveball usage rate's gone down a little bit as well. The sinker has gone up, sliders about the same, but Milwaukee's definitely worked their magic on him, as they tend to do very frequently with pitchers. So Definitely, you know, I think he's fantasy viable, top 75-ish arm, but yeah, I just don't see the value continuing to go up. So if you can get something for him, I don't know if he's super attractive. Maybe if you're a team that had him and you're, you know, not a contender, you're like eighth, ninth in the standings, and that one of the contending teams needs another arm for their, you know, championship push or their playoff push, I think he could be an attractive arm for them. Maybe you get a couple good prospects back or something like that. So that's kind of how I would approach Quinn Priester. We go over now to probably the best name on this list from a pitching standpoint, Christopher Sanchez. And I think everyone likes him, but the way I wanted to, you know, kind of frame this one is, are we buying him as a guy that we could have as our ace in Dynasty? You know, Sanchez had, you know, good ratios the last 2 years, you know, ERA below 3.5 each of the last 2 years. But this year, you know, taking it to a whole new level, or down to a whole new level, I should say, with the ERA, 2.50 ERA, 1.14 WHIP. And really, the, in addition to, you know, the good ratios and, you know, better ratios this year, I think that the big key for him has been the increased whiff rate and increased strikeout rate. You know, he was 20.3% last year, up to 26% this year. Still sinker, changeup, slider guy, but changeup whiff rate's gone up to 46.2%. Slider's around 33.5%. That changeup's been, you know, one of the better changeups in all of baseball. 146 batting average against, 183 slug. Sinker, 308 batting average against, but only a 394 slug and 086 ISO. So he only let 7 home runs the entire year. So I think, personally, I think Sanchez is in that back end ace discussion. I think he's in a similar range for me as, like, you know, like a Logan Webb type, where I think he's, you know, you'd be okay with him as your ace, would love him as your SP2. So yeah, I think in terms of, is he in that ace discussion? Am I buying that? Yeah, I've been a big Sanchez guy, kind of always have been the last couple of years, and he's really taken it to that next level this year. So I am buying this ace level from Sanchez. How about you, Martin?
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up Logan Webb, because he was kind of the first guy I thought of when I thought of Sanchez. Kind of a similar, not really a similar profile, but kind of the similar way of going about doing things. I really like watching Sanchez. His changeup is filthy. It's right up there with Skubal, in my opinion, is one of the best changeups in baseball. He's just doing things that nobody expected him to do. He was in the bullpen 2 years ago, and, you know, all of a sudden he's, you know, an all-star. You know, like you said, the swinging strike rate's up. I think he's over 14% now. He's still got a ground ball rate as elite. It's like 60.5%, which is very, very good. I worry a little bit about the Kevin Gausman effect, where he just starts to get BABIP to death, because it's possible. And then the luck kind of runs out. I'm not buying him as an ace for a couple of reasons. One, how many elite pitchers have we seen where the sinker is their primary pitcher? Logan Webb is kind of like in that discussion, right? So, you know, Framber uses his sinker a lot. You know, Sanchez uses his sinker a lot, but it's hard to find an elite starting pitcher that uses a sinker as his primary pitch. So that's part of the reason. The other reason, like you said, the strikeouts just aren't there, you know, or I should say they're not there. They're not at that ace level. He checks a lot of boxes. He throws, you know, a lot of quality innings. He pitches deep into games. He plays on a good team, so the win probability is high. But when I'm looking for an ace in fantasy, I'm looking for that elite strikeout ratio. I'm looking at that 30% range. 26% is great. Maybe he gets up to 30% at some point. But I need that high end strikeout rate to be able to get him to a fantasy ace level. That's kind of why I'm not buying in on guys like George Kirby isn't fantasy ace either. I want more strikeouts. That's what you want out of an ace, right? And so I'm not buying him as an ace, but he's a very high end SP2 for me. And I think I just put him inside my top 150 overall. He's really, really good. So I like Sanchez a lot.
Yeah, so I don't think we're too terribly far apart in terms of, you know, where we have him ranked among pitchers. I have him ranked for that high in SP2, maybe back in SP1 in deeper formats. And yeah, no, I definitely hear you. You look for a higher K rate with him, but I think he'll give you the good volume, which they can make up for a little bit of the, you know, the non-elite K rate. And I don't think he's ever up to 30%. I just don't really see that with him. Maybe unless he adds a, you know, another breaking ball or something, you know, maybe he adds a curveball, cutter, something, I don't know, whatever it may be. But I think this iteration of Sanchez is still a very, very valuable arm. He feels like he's probably one of the 10 safest arms in baseball, which I probably just jinxed him. And if I did, I'm sorry. But, you know, I like Sanchez a lot. And I have him in my home keeper league. And I'm going to be keeping him absolutely this year as one of my 10 keepers. So, yeah, definitely excited about Sanchez. Looking at that changeup, though, real quick before we move on. In terms of run value on Servant, Sanchez has the third best changeup behind Skubal and Michael Wacha. And for changeup whiff rate, he's fourth. Reese Olson is third. Tarek Skubal is second with whiff rate on changeup. And number one, never would have guessed this, Joey Cantillo with a 48.8% whiff rate on his changeup, though he is a lot less, changeups thrown than the other three there. But yeah, one of the best changeups in baseball from Christopher Sanchez. Let's go down to the state of Florida here for our next two, one from the Rays, one from the Marlins, both very fun, but really maddening arms to roster over the last few years. Start with Miami Marlins and Edward Cabrera, who's really been kind of taking a nice step forward this year after having an ERA close to 5 last year, 3.61 ERA and a 1.26 whip this year in 82 and a third innings, K rate around 25%, which is kind of in line. He's been 25-26% basically every year of his career. But the biggest thing with him, walk rate was always above 11%. It's only 8.5% this year. So nice step forward there in his age 27 season. And Cabrera's really been pitching a lot better of late, too. So like that ERA has been coming down. You look at in May, or each of the last 3 months, really, he's had an ERA of 3 or less. ERA of 2 on the dot in 5 May starts, 289 in 4 June starts, and 3 on the nose so far in his 3 July starts after a 7.23 ERA in 4 April starts. So been pitching pretty well for a few months now, and I don't think it's getting talked about nearly enough just because it's Miami, and you know, the only guy people are talking about with Miami right now is Stowers and maybe a little bit of Ramirez. So I don't think the perceived value has really jumped as much as it probably should has, but I'm still a little hesitant here, Martin, with Edward Cabrera, just because I used to be a big Cabrera guy. You know, he's always had the good stuff, but just command control, super inconsistent. So I'm still a bit hesitant here. But what about you? Are you buying into this kind of last 2.5 month surge from Edward Cabrera?
Yeah, he's kind of like the Lou Bob of pitchers, right?
So that's fair.
The talent is like off the charts, but something just isn't clicking between the ears for him sometimes. He can go back-to-back games where he's 7 innings, you know, 7 shutout innings with double-digit Ks, and then he can go a month where he doesn't get more than 15 outs in any game. It's just one of those things where it just doesn't consistently come together for him. I was looking at some of his data today, and I've noticed he's gone a lot more sinker, which is interesting because it's actually making him almost more pitch to contact than strikeouts. He's only had 1 10 strikeout game this year and only 3 over 7 strikeouts. So the allure with Cabrera for me has always been the strikeout upside. And then you just kind of lived and died with the heartburn that comes with the walk rates and the blowups. So for me, I'm on the fence. I like that the Marlins are giving him run, but they don't really have anybody else. I mean, if you would have told me before the season that Cabrera would have been more valuable in fantasy than in Sandy Alcantara, I would have just laughed in your face, to be honest with you. So,
damn.
So if you can find somebody who's buying the success and willing to give up, some solid capital to get Cabrera, I think I'm just going to sell while he's going well. And if I miss out, I miss out. It's such a high risk for me to take.
Yeah, I'm on the fence on this one. I think I can make a case to hold and to sell. I don't know about buying right now, like if you didn't have him. But if you have them, I mean, I'm not opposed to holding because I think there has been some viable improvements this year. Except the strike throwing has been a lot better, after being above 11% every year, 8.5%. That's really encouraging, and he's filling the zone more. First pitch strike rate is, 61%. That's pretty solid. That's around league average. And he still has an above average whiff rate as well and above average chase rate too. So still a lot of good there. But yeah, like I said, I'm just hesitant to go like, you know, invest heavily in Eric Cabrera just because I've seen we've all seen the kind of the downside, when the bottom falls out for him. But, you know, do I think he could be a, you know, top 60 to 70 pitcher? Yeah, it might be maddening week to week, month to month, but at the end of the year, you know, assuming he can keep the walk rate down where it is now, where he's close to league average walk rate now, I'll be okay with withholding him. But if he's going to start ticking back up, you start seeing that walk rate creeping back up, then I'd be looking to maybe offload him before kind of that bottom falls out again. So yeah. I don't know.
He's also had some elbow stuff recently too, which I mean, he's never really been a model of health either. He's always been dinged up a little bit here and there. And if that elbow is going to start giving out on him, this is definitely the time to get rid of him if you can.
Yeah, because he's never reached 100 innings in the season. He came really close in 2023. He had 99 2/3, 96 and a third last year, 82 and a third this year. But yeah, he's never been over 100 innings, and he had 71 2/3 in his first kind of fuller year after his 2021 debut when he had 7 starts. But yeah, talent's there. I think he'll look like a top 50 arm at times, but I don't know. I think there's just I'm not quite ready to like go there with him consistently yet. But this next guy, I think I'm more willing to buy into. That's Shane Baz of the Tampa Bay Rays. Still only 26 years old. It feels like he should be like a few years older than that with how long Shane Baz has been around and how long I've been, you know, talking about him and ranking him, because he got drafted way back in 2017, 12th overall by the Pirates way back then. But you know, he's been pitching pretty well here of late as well. You know, after a 7.26 ERA in May, he had a 3.26 ERA in both June and July so far. 5 starts in June, 3 in July, 54 strikeouts to 18 walks. So 3-1 strikeout to walk ratio since the beginning of June. WHIP is around 1.10 since the beginning of June. So low, 3.26 ERA, 1.10 WHIP since the start of June. K rate's always been, you know, pretty solid with him, though it's kind of gone up and down. It's up to 23.5% right now. It was down to 21.5% last year, 25.5% a year before that. Walk rate's always been right around league average the last couple of years. But really fun arsenal here with Baz, though. Not any one pitch right now has a big whiff rate. They're all, he's got 4 of them between 24 and 29%, which are his 4 most used offerings: the 4-seam, the knuckle curve, the changeup, and the cutter. Slider usage rate's gone down a lot this year. He's almost scrapped the slider after it being a pretty solid pitch for him last year. So kind of interesting to see that. He only throws it 5% of the time now. Added the cutter, so he kind of replaced the slider with the cutter. He's made some changes overall this year, but he's been up and down pretty much, but up lately, as I mentioned. So where are you at on Shane Baz now, Martin? You know, again, really, really fun player, plenty of upside, but like Cabrera, we've seen the downside with him as well.
Yeah, so I don't actually have any shares of Baz in Dynasty. I had one at one point, and I think I ended up moving him when he was on, when he had TJ, but this is the time when I would absolutely buy Baz. He hasn't looked the same since he's come back from Tommy John, but that's kind of to be expected. I guess the biggest concern I have with him right now is the curveball really hasn't come back to form. It's really taken a big step back this year in particular. So with that said, you know, also kind of, like you said, mentioned, scrapped the slider almost completely and went to the cutter instead, which, you know, there's got to be something to it, right? They don't just do things just to do things. So right, he's going to get back at some point to where he was or as close to where he was. But if I'm frustrated with Baz and I don't have any shares, that means the owner of Baz is very frustrated. And this is the perfect time to buy low. I still think he's a top 30 arm in Dynasty, maybe even better. I mean, he should be up there in consideration with like the Jackson Jobs and even his teammate Ryan Pepiot. Like that's kind of the range he's in. He's got the stuff. He's gonna eventually figure it out. He's still 26. I'm buying the dip on Baz and just hoping that he puts it all together and just rights the ship. Another thing too is the ballpark is terrible. Like it's killing him. He's sub-3 on the road and his ERA is over 6 at home. Like get them out of that stupid ballpark.
Yeah, I like Tamara Field and all, but yeah, it's definitely not pitcher friendly at all. It's definitely more of a hitter friendly environment there. But yeah, I've always been a Baz guy. I mean, he's a guy I loved when he was with Pittsburgh and all the way up through the Tampa Bay system. had a chance to interview him. He was a great interview as well. And just really, you know, fun pitcher to watch. And I think he's kind of like changed a little bit this year. I mean, we talked about some of that already, but you know, he's kind of been more, you know, inducing ground balls better than he ever has. 49% ground ball rate. That's up 10% from last year. So I think he's kind of maybe substituting a little bit of that swing and miss stuff for some ground ball, some weaker contact, which I think is good. You know, he's giving up, you know, less hard hit balls, though the barrel rate is up a bit though. So, but yeah, I think top 30, 40 range, I think is fair for Boz. And if he does get that K rate back up, I think he can be a top 25 arm, a little bit of a riskier arm. I mean, all arms are risky these days, but Boz a little bit more than most, but he's finally over 100 innings this year. So yeah, I think I'm looking to buy more so than sell right now. I'd look to, and if you have him, I'd look to hold right now. I think the value, as long as he stays healthy, the value should continue to tick up here and be pretty solid moving forward. All right, last name on the list for today. Speaking of maddening, I can't figure this guy out. I mean, just when I was finally, you know, moving him up and buying in, and then he's kind of gone back to the old Mackenzie Gore. But I mean, I don't know. Maybe you have a better idea on him, Martin. But Gore, 3.59 ERA in 20 starts this year, 1.27 WHIP, and so this is still the best year of Gore's career. I mean, he's got a career high 30.5% strikeout rate, only a 7.5% walk rate. That's also a career best mark, but he's really kind of fallen off of late. I mean, he was dominant at the start, especially in May and June. 2.63 ERA in June. I mean, in May, excuse me, 2.93 ERA in June, and then July 7.24 ERA in three starts. You know, that walk rate starting to tick back up a little bit. K rate is starting to tick down a little bit. He was around like a 35% K rate, you know, several weeks ago. So I'm starting to wonder, is he reverting back into the Gore of old? I don't know. He's one of the hardest pitchers for me to rank right now. But where are you at on Gore? Maybe you have a better, you know, handle on his ranking and value than I do right now, Martin.
No, I don't have a better. I literally have in my notes, he feels a lot like Edward Cabrera. It's kind of that thing, right? It's the command and control. When he's got it, he's got it. When he doesn't, he doesn't. Like today, you know, he gave up 8 earned in 2 1/3 innings. He's only allowed 4 hard hits in the game. Like, he just got kind of, you know, BABIP to death. But then over his last 3 starts, he had allowed 4 earned runs in 17 1/3 innings. So it's going to be a roller coaster ride with Gore. The positives are that he's getting that strikeout rate up. He's over 30%, which is always a big win for anyone in fantasy. He's top 5 in strikeouts right now in baseball, plus the walk rate's actually down. But there's going to be a lot of volatility in the profile. And obviously, this is definitely the best Gore we've seen. And I'm fully buying into the breakout. I think it's there. If you can stomach the ups and downs, he's going to be really good. He's still super young. He's got the pedigree. There's a lot to like, a lot more trending in the right direction than the wrong direction, even if he struggled a little bit of late. I've got him in my top 125 overall, around SP35. So kind of in that range that I was talking about with Boz. I really like Gore. My caution to dynasty owners is don't overpay for one really strong season. If you truly buy the changes like I do, you know, you're willing to buy, but don't overpay, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that definitely does make sense. I think that's a good point too. With Gore, just like, you know, yeah, maybe I'm like putting too much stock into today's blow up, but he had a 5 earned run outing, you know, I think 4 starts ago. You know, he saw the strikeouts, you know, after being a lot of 8-9 plus strikeout outings. Now he's been more like 4-5-6 lately. I don't know. I'm on board with Gore, you know, being a top 40 arm moving forward. It may be higher than that in some seasons. I just don't think I'm ever going to have any shares, because I feel like the perceived value on Gore, what other people think of Gore, will always be a little bit higher than what I think of Gore. Again, I like Gore. I don't love Gore. And I think a lot of people do love Gore, or just like him more than I do. So I'm probably never going to have, I don't have any shares right now, and probably won't have any shares. I'm not opposed to it. Again, I just don't think the perceived value and my personal evaluation of him is going to line up for, you know, a potential trade. But since you mentioned Boz and them being in the same range, if you had to pick one moving forward, Shane Boz or Mackenzie Gore, Martin, who would you go with?
Oh, I'm still going to take Boz. I really am. I just think the arm talent's better. I think that there's more upside there, even though we're seeing a lot of what Gore is capable of. I just think Boz has the better stuff, and I think it will eventually be not as close as it is now. So I'll lean Boz, but it's a tough decision right now, but I think I'll still go Boz.
I have Gore ranked ahead at the moment. I can see that flipping.
I do too.
And I'd also say that I think if you're going to go out and get one right now, I think you can get Boz for, I think, a decent amount cheaper than you can get a Mackenzie Gore. I think that perceived value and price tag for Boz isn't quite as high. So if you're kind of like us and think these two guys could be similar long-term in terms of value, I think Boz is the cheaper buy and is the better value target right now in Dynasty Leagues. But all right, that's going to wrap us up. Martin, thanks for coming on. What do you got going on right now over on your Substack and over on Pitcher List?
Yeah, so I've been busy with Pitcher List more than anything. My Substack, I've kind of slowed down a little bit. I ran into a little all-star break wall there, and then we had some family stuff going on over the last week, so I didn't really write as much as I wanted to. So getting back on the horse later on tonight, going to start writing some stuff. But Pitcher List, four articles a month, AL East and NL Central, farm reports. I do the top 350 Dynasty, and I also do the prospects of the month. And then on my Substack, I do a daily article called The Four Bagger, which highlights the top four fantasy things from the day before. Also released my top 250 prospect rankings, the position by position redraft and dynasty rankings. So a little bit of everything, just trying to keep everybody happy.
Yeah, no, that's what it is here. You can find Martin stuff again on Pitcher List. And his Substack is linked in his Twitter bio. Again, he's at M_SKI22 on Twitter. That's going to wrap us up. Thanks to everyone for tuning in this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back with you again next week. But until then, everyone take care.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.